Yesterday was primary day in Nevada, and chances are you didn't vote. With no big names or races on the ballot, the turnout was just under 15%. That's a new record low. Nevertheless, there were winners. They will be on the ballot in November, and some losers might have run their last races. Joining us to talk about the results of yesterday's elections, John Ralston, who hosts Ralston Reports on News 3 and writes at his website, ralstonreports.com. John, welcome back.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, you predicted Mark Hutchison was going to win the Republican primary for lieutenant governor, and he did. Was he a better candidate? Did he run a better campaign? How did he do it?
Yes and yes. He also spent a lot more money, probably twice as much in the end, maybe a little bit more, to beat Sue Loudon. I always said that she had a chance to be competitive, Dave, but that she had to write a very, very large check, maybe as much as $1 million. She didn't come close to that. And you also have an extraordinarily popular governor essentially integrating his entire political operation and essentially being Hutchison's surrogate wherever he went. Very difficult to overcome that in a primary. And Sue Loudon just has too much baggage from the past, ran with all that debt that she still owed from her U.S. Senate bid, which was a crippling issue. And as we know from the Hutchison commercials, her contributions to the most hated man among the Republican electorate, Harry Reid, also hurt her.
So Sue Loudon ran 4 years ago for senator as something of an insider. She ran as something of an outsider. She lost another big race yesterday. Is she contemplating the end of a political career?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. You never say never, especially in Nevada, where people are dead and then get resurrected. I mean, the greatest example of that, of course, is the Senate Majority Leader himself, Harry Reid, who lost the U.S. Senate bid in 1974, then ran for mayor in 1975 and got crushed, and everyone thought his career was over. Now, he was much younger than Sue Loudon is now. Sue Loudon's in her early 60s. She's lost three races in a row now. She lost her re-election for state senate way back in the 90s, lost in that U.S. Senate primary to Sharon Angle, and now she's gotten crushed in this race too. It just doesn't seem like there's an obvious opening for her right now. But again, I just never say never in Nevada politics, Dave.
All right. So then with Mark Hutchison moving on, he will face Democrat Lucy Flores, who beat her token opposition. Who wins in a race between Hutchison and Flores?
I think that Hutchison is the favorite just because of the governor's popularity, because it's an off-year election and Democratic turnout will not be what it is. But I don't think people should underestimate Lucy Flores. I think that if she can tap into the Hispanic base in the in the Democratic Party that has been turning out in greater and greater numbers, if the Democrats can maintain their registration edge, if she can run a good, disciplined campaign, I think she has a chance to win. She is not the favorite. She's the underdog. But I think there are reasons to believe this could be a competitive race.
Okay, so now locally, we move to the sheriff's race, Larry Burns and Joe Lombardo. Why did they emerge from this big field? Was it just money or was there more than that?
I think it was mostly money. Joe Lombardo raised $500,000 last year, even more and a little bit more this year. He was running TV incessantly for a long time. People weren't paying that close attention. They don't know any of these guys. They ended up knowing Joe Lombardo a little bit. And I have to tell you that Larry Burns got some late support from a couple of casino companies. He's got the police union support. I think they were the obvious favorites. They came out of it. Even though Lombardo won by a substantial margin, I do think that this has the potential to be a really good race.
Now, former Assistant Sheriff Ted Moody had campaigned for better budgeting. He was known for a stand in calling for an officer involved in a shooting to be disciplined. He came in third. Where do his voters break in the race come November?
Well, the interesting question, I guess, Dave, is are they Ted Moody voters? Are they just anti-Metro voters? He can't endorse either of the guys running, I don't think, because of what he said during the primary. And so they're going to each have to go out and essentially try to win those voters by saying, I am an establishment guy from Metro or recently from Metro, but it's time for a change to some extent. Tough needle to thread, but that's what they're going to have to do.
That's what they'll have to do. Now, I want to turn now to another hot political issue. On Friday, the Clark County Commission whittled down a massive list of applicants for medical marijuana licenses to just 18, and these are the 18 who will go forward for approval by the state. So why did the county commission select these 18, John? Is there a pattern going on here?
Well, it's hard to say if there's a pattern or not. I've written a lot about this, Dave, and I actually collected the tally sheets from the commissioners. They filled out these tally sheets through several rounds of voting to winnow 80 or so applicants down to the 18. Listen, there was a lot of political juice involved here. People very well connected won these. You did have to have some money to get into the business, but there are people who appear before the county commission all the time, people who are very large campaign contributors. Some of the commissioners took substantial contributions right before they made this decision. The process to me looked very open, but what actually I think was fairly opaque to most people. It was quite unseemly, even though Steve Sisolak, the chairman, did a pretty amazing job of running the meetings very efficiently and being fair to all the applicants. I think some of this was a done deal in advance. I think a lot of connected people, former legislators, major developers and business folks, got these dispensaries, which have the potential to make some people very rich.
Very rich indeed. Now, you have said that this meeting held on Friday by the commission breached the open meeting law. What should they have done to make sure the selection process complied with open meeting laws in Nevada?
Did I go so far as to say it breached the open meeting law? Did I say that, Dave?
Well,
I implied it strongly, did I not?
I'm divining it from your words.
There
yes.
you go. Listen, I think that if they didn't violate the letter of the open meeting law, which they may not have, they certainly violated the spirit. The open meeting law is designed to show the public how decisions are made in a public forum. They filled out these tally sheets. None of them really explained why they were choosing any of those 18. And so that just goes against the whole premise of open government. It was not an open process. And I don't think they could have made it an open process and explained why they chose some of the people over other people beyond the fact that there was political juice applied. So, you know, this is far from over, too, Dave. You know, they still have cultivation facility licenses to award and grow facility licenses to award the other cities. The cities in southern Nevada and in northern Nevada are going to award some of these. And so we have not even gotten past the tip of the iceberg yet on this, Dave.
Now, juice, political juice. Big players and well-connected one, but what does this say about the juice possessed by Las Vegas Sun publisher Brian Greenspun and former Clark County Commissioner Chair Rory Reed, who both lost out?
There were some big names who lost, too. And when you have so many big names and so much political juice involved and a limited number of licenses, someone has to lose, right? And so, you mentioned a couple who lost. There was a time when if Brian Greenspun wanted something, they would have feared not giving him something because of the power of the Las Vegas Sun. I think that's a measure of the lack of fear that the commissioners have of the Sun anymore and how it's become fairly marginalized as an influential source of news and how Brian Greenspun's power may have ebbed. What's going to be interesting is to watch some of these folks. For instance, Rory Reed's client, TerraTech, a public company, still has some applications in for the non-dispensary aspects of this. So I don't think they'll make too much noise. It will be interesting to see if any of these other folks decide to take legal action based on the process as it existed. A lot of people were talking big after the vote. We'll see what happens.
Do you think there's a potential loophole there, the open meeting laws and such?
I think that you can file a lawsuit based on almost anything, right? I think that they could latch on to the openness of the process. What other causes of action, I don't know. All I know is that it's the same with journalists and opinions and lawyers and causes of action. The number is exactly commensurate with the number of those that you have in a room.
All right. In about 30 seconds or so, you've published several tally sheets listing for whom each commissioner voted. On the other hand, the check marks and boxes just makes the process seem so much more random. Was this something where winners were managed by experienced entrepreneurs or well-funded?
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
and I think that it's clear that some people had an advantage because of their political connections, because of their contributions. It's going to be very hard for the commissioners to argue otherwise. And anybody who watched those presentations saw some people who made really excellent presentations but had absolutely no connection to the political structure.
Okay, so merit didn't enter into it?
I think, don't get me wrong. Some of those people who won and had political connections also had very good presentations. And if you have a very good presentation and political juice versus a very good presentation, who do you think is going to win?
Touche. John Ralston, host of Ralston Reports on News 3, writes at his website, ralstonreports.com. John, always good to have you here.
Thanks so much, Dave.